Good morning, and welcome to Inside Kalima. I'm Cindy Thomas, and I am usually co-hosting with my buddies Janice Peter Thompson and Jason Davies, but today they are off and about doing something else, so I have with me Matt McGuire, former city council member, and Bruce Hagen. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning.
It's nice to have a couple of fellow activists with me.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Great to be back in the KPCA studio.
Yeah, you're a retired...
retired programmer.
How long did you do that show, Matt?
About a year and a half. Two Mooks and a Mic started out as Two Mics and a Mic with John Crowley.
And I remember that.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. And Bruce, you keep yourself busy, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep. I see you all around.
On his bicycle.
I
have negative free time. It's a new concept I'm developing.
So how did the week go for you guys?
Well, mine was somewhat productive, if hair pulling, working on plumbing in the house and, chores of a physical nature, things like that.
Yeah, just pretty much one week to the next, enjoying the nice weather. Got my son and his wife and my new granddaughter living with us.
Ooh la la.
And she's a charmer, so.
What's her name?
May, spelled M-E-I.
Yeah, nice.
We got a full house.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. So, me, I've been doing my stuff. Janice and I have been focusing on traffic and parking and other issues in here, and Janice and I were... able to meet this week with our new city manager. Well, she's not so new anymore. We all call her new.
Yeah, Peggy Flynn.
Peggy Flynn, and with our chief of police, Ken Sabano, and we talked parking for an hour, which was very interesting. We thought we were coming in there with a list of things, of course, we think they don't know anything about, right? But then, of course, Ken told us that he was fully aware of a lot of our issues and the solutions that they've been offered, and we offered a few that he hadn't heard of. So,
yeah, were these downtown parking issues?
This is parking in Petaluma in general. For us, it's not so much parking downtown as it is residential parking.
Oh.
Yeah, Janice has a commercial boat that's parked in her neighborhood that she often talks about on this show.
Oh. Yeah.
I've got an environmental services business that exists in the house across the street where they think it's okay to park three of their vehicles on the street. We only have 8 parking spaces and for 10 houses in my court, so 3 of them being taken up by commercial vehicles is not okay. So.
Yeah.
And then there's the trailers. Oh, excuse me. There's trailers and whatnot. So the police department and the city are working on a new parking ordinance.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Ken has agreed to come and talk on the show sometime in the future when they get closer to having a draft. So
The parking ordinance now is 72 hours, right?
72 hours.
Correct. So you have to move your car or vehicle.
You have to move your car or vehicle.
So they're going to change that?
They're talking more about permit parking.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm not a big fan of putting the sticker on your car and having to have a permit to park in the neighborhood.
Right.
The permits that I would be supportive of would be you go on vacation and your car is parked out in front of your house. You call the police department and you get a permit to
leave it there.
You can extend.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to be changes with... recreational vehicles, trailers, boats being parked in your driveway, which prohibits you from putting your cars in the driveway or the garage, and it takes up more parking on the street. So they're looking at that.
They do have some permit parking over by the JC, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, because that became when the JC went in, I remember that became a big issue with the neighborhoods around there.
Yeah, I used to live over in Southgate a couple of years ago, and they have the apartments. I can't remember what the name of the apartments, the big complex there, the Lakeville apartment complex, started charging their tenants to have additional vehicles in the parking spaces in the complex.
Uh-huh.
And those vehicles then moved at nighttime
out to the neighborhood.
Over to Southgate, So, yeah, then that neighborhood started talking about making it a gated community, parking stickers. I don't want to live here.
Nah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfriendly.
Which is kind of funny. I was one of those when I ran for council that was opposed to Southgate, and then I ended up living there.
Yeah. One of those little local ironies, eh?
Yeah. So, anyway, the other thing that struck me was the board of directors for the SMART train are having discussions about the 5 deaths that have occurred in the last 3 weeks.
And 3 of those suicides.
3 of those suicides, right. Yeah. And then you and I were talking before the show, Matt, and that you said somebody referred to the train as I Ride the Suicide Train, which is a particular time of day. And we're starting to name trains suicide
trains. Well, it's funny. I mean, so it's like suicides apparently are going up, and under the conditions of the world in this country today, that's not surprising. But, for SMART to have to be, the focal point for addressing, mental illness or depression or things of that is a pretty big load to lift.
Yeah.
I suggested to my wife that they should just make it, anybody that's feeling suicidal should get a free ride on the train. Because then they're on the train.
That's a good one, Matt.
Trying to think out of the box there, Cindy.
And then Bruce brought it up that we passed a $15 minimum wage.
Yeah, the city council unanimously.
Yeah. When did that take effect?
I'm not sure. I think possibly next year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I read through the article, but now I don't recall.
Yeah. Well, I don't get the paper, so.
But I did email the council members and suggested some employers were saying, well, if we pay for some low cost health care for our workers, then we should get a credit, and and so there was a calculus in the staff report about that, and pay them $13.50 an hour instead, but that level of what they would be paying for health care is very minimal. But one of the things that needed to be pointed out is that a lot of times, with my work with accompaniment, which is part of Petaluma Rapid Response, working with a Haitian family, Gene, the father, who works a couple of jobs, has found that, he went to work for LabCon. He got the job through a temp, employment agency, and he's not eligible for any, health care or benefits until he's worked there for a year. And guess what? A year comes up and they let him go. And so the ordinance needed to address that issue so that people who are there working on a temp basis are still eligible for a minimum wage of $15 an hour.
Well, it's good to see that the income inequality issue is now getting more and more attention, more credibility, and, Petaluma's ahead of the curve on a lot of things, but I guess the House passed.
Yesterday.
Yeah,
the House passed $15 an hour. Mitch McConnell in the Senate says he's going to refuse to take up the bill. So,
isn't democracy supposed to have debates on things and then they vote based on the merits?
Yeah, where is there a democracy around here these days in Washington?
Yeah, it's on the, I think it's on the left side or is it the right side of the Capitol building? But in any case,
it's in the House, but it's not in the Senate.
We're going to recover our democracy and a lot of other things in the next few years.
Doing it. That's right. Well, and what's interesting, like you say, in 2016, when Bernie Sanders was saying we should have $15 federal minimum wage, it was like Pelosi and mainstream Democrats were like, "Oh no, that's not doable. We can't do it."
Yeah.
And now they just passed it. So things do change.
Yeah, and it's about time because I, for one, have been working on the living wage, Sonoma County Living Wage Coalition since 2000 when Marty Bennett and I and a couple of others put it together. And
that's right.
Here we are 19 years later, and we're finally having the conversation,
So. It takes a long time to get certain things done, right?
Speaking of which.
there's the lead-in.
Thank you to our city council for that. And before we get into what we actually came here to talk about, I want to remind folks that the 12th Annual Petaluma Music Festival is happening on Saturday, August 3rd at the Sonoma Marin Fairgrounds right here in Petaluma. And the doors for that open at noon. I believe it runs until 9. I do have a ticket, but I don't recall what the hours. But I think it's 12 to 9. Isn't it something like
that? Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And all the proceeds are going to keep the Petaluma schools with music programs.
Yeah.
So that's something that we want to support. So.
People rave about this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. The lineup is great. They've got ALO, David Nelson Band, the Mother Hips, Royal Jelly Jive, which is now a big local favorite. And actually, I saw them at the High Sierra Music Festival three times.
Oh, really?
And they were hot. You couldn't get into the stage. It was packed. Yeah. It was packed. So anyway, if you have nothing to do on August 3rd, go online to PetalumaMusicFestival.org, purchase a ticket, and come hang with us. It's going to be a lot of fun. And the schools need it. We got to keep music alive.
There you go.
All righty then. So, with that, Bruce and Matt, let's talk Lafferty. And I want to mention, again, that Matt and Bruce are both local activists, long-time activists.
Long time.
Both of you have been working on Lafferty for a very long time. So, tell us, how did this all start? How was Lafferty even a dream?
Well, it's Lafferty Ranch. Lafferty Ranch is a piece of property owned by the city of Petaluma. It's 270 acres, bought in 1959 from a private water company. It has the headwaters of Adobe Creek on it and was purchased to provide water for the city of Petaluma, which it did for a few years until the city then got on board with the Sonoma County Water Agency and, you know, started getting its water from the Russian River. But it's an amazing piece of property. It's a sort of a long rectangle shape that runs up the face of Sonoma Mountain, and which you can see it if you're standing anywhere, you know, downtown or around town and look up at Sonoma Mountain. It's pretty much in the middle of your field of vision up there.
And it looks like a face, but when you get up there, it's actually more like the back, you know.
Yeah.
People think it's like this cliff that you have to be Alex Honnold or something to scale, but in fact, there's a lot of it. There's some steep switchbacks, but a lot of it is very walkable. And in fact, the lower part of it is going to have an ADA accessible trail.
That's right.
With an overlook of Petaluma. So.
Which is fairly flat. It's got a wetlands in there that's quite beautiful. And it's been a long battle because what happened was that Peter Findler bought property next to Lafferty Ranch. And Lafferty Ranch had been in the general plan as slated as an eventual park. Peter Findler it's a long history and we can't go into all of it, but he tried to acquire it from the city. And people didn't realize what a jewel it is. And so the word kind of got out. I heard it from Dan Williams, and he was an engineer living here in town at the time, and there was something on the agenda about...
this was 1992 we're talking about.
1992, right? Yeah. The city selling it off. And at the time, John Scherer was the city manager, and he was just a good old boy, and which was one of the things that prompted me to run because, you know, if you were his buddy, things went your way, and if you weren't, they didn't. But this was something that was going to happen without any real public awareness or input. And so a number of us heard about it and went up there and checked it out, found out how beautiful it was, and started making a big stink at the city council. That kind of shined the light on it, and people started to become aware of what an amazing piece of property it is and what a great place it would be to have a park. Then it became... Peter Findler bought Moon Ranch, tried to swap it, not nearly as nice. I actually ran on, you know, one of the main issues I ran for the first time on my term in city council was on Lafferty to stop the sale of it. And once I got on there, even though I was in the minority, I got the council majority to agree to allow public tours of both Moon Ranch and Lafferty Ranch. And we had our little local bus system, carpooling people up there. And, you know, we got, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds. Do you remember how many people?
I think there was a total of about 500. And I think this was, by the way, 1995. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then and people were almost unanimous in their belief that we should keep Lafferty Ranch and not trade it for Moon. And so that kind of killed the Moon swap deal.
That plus the largest voter fraud in the history of California.
Well, that was the next step. But, you know, of course, this made Peter Findler, who is a multimillionaire, furious, and this got very political. And he, in the meantime, gave a lot of money to Tom Ferrer, who was the head of the Casa Grande United Anglers, and they built a hatchery with that money, and then he became a real, you know, propagandist for Peter Findler, and, you know, helped spread the lie that public access on Lafferty Ranch would destroy this pristine, you know, ecosystem. It is a rare ecosystem. It does have yellow-legged frog and red-legged frog habitat. Those are threatened and endangered species. And it is beautiful, but the public's access to it is not a threat to, you know, rare and endangered species when properly managed.
Okay, so who was this Peter Findler? Is he a longtime Petaluma resident that was interested in it?
He was a guy who had made his millions. He was a fighter pilot in Vietnam and a Yale law grad, and he started a Phoenix leasing company, which was like one of the first jet leasing companies, which he later sold to GE and then was promptly sued for apparently cooking the books on the maintenance, which is the, you know, the like the worst thing you could do with air, you know, with jets and things. But he had made his millions. He owned like 10,000 acres up in around Redding, I think it was, and then started buying a property on Sonoma Mountain and promptly tried to get the county to block off Sonoma Mountain Road right at Adobe, saying, oh, this is a private road. Well, in this whole process of this political battle, we quickly learned that the county had rights of way that had been established like in 1866 and 1869. A couple of maps we found that showed there was access. And Findler tried to argue that there's a, you know, a right angle turn in the road up there where the gate to Lafferty is, and he'd claim that, you know, his property went to the middle of the road and that would be trespassing, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's there was a red herring argument from the get-go. And as Bruce alluded to, during this process, this got very political and got very nasty and very ugly. There were a couple of efforts to put initiatives on the ballot, three of them. One was run by the Friends of Lafferty Park, and there's another group, Citizens for Lafferty Ranch and a park, what is it, CLLRP, Citizens for Lafferty, and anyway, a regional park, too. And Findler paid people to gather signatures for two initiatives, one that would say no access ever and one that was like access three times a year with docent lead or something. Our initiative, which would have allowed us to be on Lafferty for the last couple of decades, was flawed by a technicality in the publication in the newspaper, which the Findler's attorneys pointed out, which made ours moot. But we got
5,000 something signatures within the 6-week period, and then because of this public notification technicality, it was invalidated.
Yeah.
Their two initiatives got a lot of signatures, but they all looked alike because they were all done by two or three people.
And they were signed. The signatures were all in peacock blue ink.
And in fact, my name was.
Well, what it was is just that the people who had the paid signature gatherers had forged thousands.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, it's a colorful way to put it, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I think I would love to dig up those records if they are, because my name's probably in there in peacock blue, signed by one of three people.
Wow.
But that turned out to be the largest case of voter fraud in the history of California. And, of course, it was very embarrassing to the county supervisor then. Was it
Jim Harbison?
Jim Harbison.
Because his aide was directly involved in that effort.
Yeah. It was just classic pulp fiction, pulp reality.
Banana Republic politics. And Mike Mullins was the district attorney, and he was not going to prosecute it until myself and others on the city council and the public put pressure on him to take some action, because he was just going to let it die a quiet death. And it's like, oh, no, you don't.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing. I think Dave Alcott, who was a reporter for the Argus Courier back then, was the one who did investigative journalism on this stuff. And he did an incredible series of reports for probably a year or two, you know, bringing all this stuff to light. And it probably wouldn't have, you know, God bless the free press here. And when they had the ability to hire a smart and aggressive journalist to dig all this stuff up. Otherwise, it could have passed without public knowledge.
Yeah, so without you know, really getting people's awareness.
So what was the outcome after this was brought to light?
Well, the outcome was that a couple of those people who were directly involved in the signature spent a few months in jail, and Jim Harbison's aide was fired. And then it was kind of a draw, because then the none of the initiatives had passed. In the meantime, the city, we had said, okay, we're going to move ahead with the park project, and we started to do an environmental impact report. And Findler then hired experts, expert after expert, to basically throw roadblocks in front of it, saying, oh, that people walking on the trails are going to cause massive siltation into Adobe Creek, which is a threat to the anadromous species, which, of course, were planted because there's like a weir in there that has like a 14-foot undercut that no fish can get above. And so, you know, how did those fish get up above that? Well, they weren't there before. That kind of sort of specious expertise that just one thing after another. So we had to keep addressing that in the responses in the EIR. And that drove up the price to, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then when it got to the point where, the city was on the verge of approving the EIR and then adopting the project plan, which was going to be a passive use, hiking only, basic hiking, picnicking use only, no dogs, bikes, horses, anything like that. The city had to not vote to start the plan because Findler was threatening to sue, and he had bottomless, you know, pockets, and the city had run out its budget, and, you know, that was a very painful conclusion to have to come to after everybody's work.
So you said he had endless pockets, but in past tense, where
he's
is
he dead now?
He's gone.
He's
okay.
Gone.
All right.
I think one of the significant things was that there was all about loading the costs on. So this was a very expensive project, and it was not worth anything. And the only way you can judge the worth of a place like that, you can see photographs, but you really need to go up and walk around, you know, and smell the smells and see the sights and hear the sounds. But they were effectively able to keep people off by this claim that this 20-foot patch of gravel between the dilapidated pavement on the corner there and the dilapidated Lafferty Gate was somehow private property without a public easement. And I was taking, as a member of the Parks and Rec Commission, I was taking citizens, VIPs, and others on tours up there. And at one point, their lawyer wrote to the city manager and the director of parks and said, please instruct Mr. Hagen to stop doing these tours. He's trespassing. And even though we all knew that the city wasn't in a position to defend themselves against those charges just because of the depth of pockets. So we basically had this, and it's still pretty much true. People think Lafferty, it's really steep, you know, it's only for super hikers.
Which is not true.
But as long as you can keep people off, that strategy is successful. Now, this article you may have seen that Mike Healy, our city council member, who, another shout out, he's been really helpful in this for quite a long time, pointed out that these right-of-way things were not real roadblocks, and I think the city is going to proceed now because of all the evidence. As soon as the public gets a chance to go up there and walk around, as did those 500 people did back in
1995,
you know, it's going to be like, wow, there was a battle over this. There was a battle over this 20-foot strip of gravel, you know, and this beautiful 270 acres.
Yeah.
So we're pretty confident that going forward now, there's going to be some residual challenges or dissatisfaction. But I think the other part of this is if you look at the concerns that the neighbors had about fire, about safety on the road, about environment, there is a way to develop a park and to implement park access, which Sonoma County is now doing probably exemplary, that doesn't involve just swinging the gates wide open and walking away. There's a period of time where people go on tours, they get guided, there's education, you get the school kids up there, and ultimately the concerns of the neighbors about fire safety, about ecology, about noise and vandalism.
Sure.
It's actually safer for all of those concerns when you have public
right.
access of that kind.
Well, that's typically done of any park, at Helen Putnam, Schulenberger. I mean, that's
the North Slope Trail, et cetera.
Yeah.
We should let your listeners know a little bit more about Lafferty's physical characteristics. So it is an amazingly beautiful piece of property. And, you know, Sonoma Mountain is not, if you were in a flying over in a plane, you wouldn't think it's very steep. There are some steep places on Lafferty. But there's a series of, like, rolling benches, open meadows, oak woodlands, the Adobe Creek little canyon. At the bottom, there's the intent in the mediation we've just gone through. There was an intent to put a trail, an ADA trail out to an overlook that you just look out over the Petaluma Valley. You can see the river all the way out to the bay. You can see the city in the distance. You can see the hills in the East Bay. It's just really gorgeous. Then as you climb higher, you even get more amazing views. You can see all around towards, Cotati and Roner Park over, more in a northerly direction. You can see out to the hills and the coast. You get up at the top. There's, again, rolling sort of flat meadows. You can see east towards the hills towards Sonoma.
Mount Diablo, Mount Tamalpais, Loma Prieta in the Santa Clara Valley, Pacific Ocean. In the afternoon, you'll see the sun shining off the water, sometimes the fog bank. Sometimes you'll be up there and you'll be surrounded by a sea of fog, and you'll just see the major peaks. And as nice as Tole is and as nice as some of these other properties were, the lowest point on Lafferty is like two times as high as the highest point on Tole. So if you want to get that top of the world, looking right down into your little nest of Petaluma, this is the place for it.
Yeah, and I think it gets up to about 2,100 feet at the top there. So it's.
And remember Clara Nelson and Mary Isaac, who were in their 70s or 80s, who walked all the way to the top. So
that's right.
It's they're steep sections, but.
But there's with proper planning for trails, it's all accessible.
Just take your time.
And over the years, I've taken many tours of people and groups up there, including Peggy Flynn, our city manager, who was very impressed. Although we didn't even get all the way to the top, pretty much people come away from there just in awe of its beauty. So
myself included.
Yeah, exactly.
I just remember seeing the Golden Gate Bridge and Mountain Cam, and it's beautiful.
It's just great, isn't it?
Well, I'm doing a lot of appreciations here, but Jane Hamilton, who we all probably know pretty well, she was one of the original advocates, and she said, from that perspective, you can see, your hometown in this context of the ocean and the Pacific Coast ranges and the San Francisco Bay, and you really get a sense of it being a town on an estuary, on a river, and you come down from the top of the mountain with a different point of view.
Understanding its history and location.
Yeah, and appreciation and love for the town, and that's really important these days.
And just to follow up on your comment, Bruce, Mike Healy has been our pro bono attorney for 15 years or something, which, it's been a long...
And Larry King.
And Larry King. it's been a long, slow process, but these guys have stuck with us. And the last 4 or 5 years, we were engaged in mediation with Kimberly Findler, Peter Findler's widow, and the Tavernettis, who own the property right below Lafferty. They had, were amongst the strongest opponents of Lafferty, although there are others up there still. And so we, it's like, okay, so we, the friends, filed a quiet title lawsuit saying, no, we have rights to this, and here's the historic right-of-ways, the maps, et cetera. And so they came back and said, no, you don't. So we said, well, rather than battle this out in a court, let's see if we can mediate an agreement. What are your concerns? We've come at this with a legitimate, sincere effort to try to resolve the issues that neighbors have. And the ones that Bruce cited are the main ones. Those are the legitimate ones. There are other opposition that is really just based on, we don't want people on our mountain, sort of attitude.
Yeah, I've heard others. One of the guys who used to live there said, we want a gate at the bottom. We want to treat the entire west face of Sonoma Mountain above Petaluma as a gated community, which means not only no hikers on Lafferty, but how many people have driven up that road to watch a sunset or to get closer to the snow or just to take their kids up for the view. And so, all that would have been snuffed out if they would have had their way. So it really was about protecting the public commons and the interest in.
Exactly, because we're not going to address the elitist attitude. That we're not going to be able to change that. But in the mediation, the effort was to say, okay, you're concerned about privacy. We'll keep the trails away from the property lines, et cetera. So we went through, a long, drawn-out, painfully slow process in the mediation, in part because our mediator was not really that competent of a mediator at running the process. But we finally came close when another person, another billionaire, bought some property up above Lafferty, and as we were coming to an agreement with Findler and the Tavernettis where they would agree to not challenge our access, basically, there's the billionaire up above said, well, if you agree to that, Ms. Findler, I'm going to sue you because, excuse me, because we all have these what are called restrictive covenants that four or five of the property owners signed up there. This is something that Peter Findler had initiated and said, look, we'll make a deal that if any one of us agrees to let public access on any of our properties, the others can sue to stop it. Okay. And so the claim is that, well, if the property line goes to the middle of the road, even though there's a county right-of-way that allows public access, this guy could sue Findler. He may not have a leg to stand on, but if you're rich enough, doesn't matter. She wants to sell the property. It's up for sale now, and she did not want to have a legal battle, and so she said, okay, I'm not going to sign a deal. But basically, it was kind of, came to a draw where the city says, well, you know what? We've got what are called the butter's rights from that road, historic access. Here's these county rights of way that are so well-defined. They go back to 1866. You know what? We'll just go ahead and we'll start actually doing a new park project development process. They put $50,000 in this year's budget to begin that process. So we are now in motion to develop a park on Lafferty Ranch.
Very nice.
City Council.
Very nice. Very nice. Boy, that was a long fight. What's next? What is it going to take for us to get the park actually accessible?
Now it goes through the public process where the city will hold hearings. It'll have to go through environmental review. A lot of that is going to be a repetition of what we did, 19 years ago or 20 years ago when we did the park development project when I was on the city council. Because basically most of the environment is largely the same there, so the environmental impacts are going to be largely the same. The wetlands has expanded, so there will have to be some adjustment for that. But that's going to go through the public process, which is dependent upon the city council's, agenda and time available, et cetera.
Okay.
But there will be an opportunity for public input and environmental review, and then it'll be like, okay, what do you want to see in the way of a park? Others may advocate for something more active, like, bicycles or something on parts of it. I don't know. It's, it really lends itself to more of a wilderness-style park experience. And then, of course, I'm of a belief that it should ultimately be a county regional park. This is great that the city council is moving ahead, and it'll make a tremendous park, whether it's a city park or a county park, but it would be better managed, I think, in the long run as part of the whole series of county regional parks.
Sure.
Like Helen Putnam and
Well, and the county has an organization with a long history, the Open Space District and the Regional Parks District, of acquiring and managing property like this. And Petaluma, bless our hearts, we happen to have bought this for watershed. We happen to have put it in our city park plan, but I don't think the city, I personally myself, would have no problem if it was deeded over to the county, provided it was developed and managed with those constraints. There was another thought I had here, but I'll come back to it.
Well, yeah, many of us would like to see it be named after Bill Cordham.
Yeah, that would be
that's,
nice.
That's my dream.
That would be nice.
Yeah, Bill's another fellow that, of course, if you know Bill Cordham, doesn't need much explaining, but he was right there in the middle of that for the longest time.
Fighting for public access to the publicly owned land,
Right.
We have encountered resistance from our supervisor David Rabbit, And, you know, David Rabbit had said, well, see what you can get done through the mediation, and then if that doesn't work well, you know, he's indicated he would support our efforts after that. I haven't had a chance to talk to him since the mediation was terminated a few months back, but it's time for him to, I think, step up. And it's time for, you know, people in South County to say, look, David, you know, this is... So Tole is interesting and nice, and it's got Native American history and context that's quite fascinating. But it's a rather plain piece of property, if I can put it that way, compared to Lafferty, which has got views and, you know, slopes and the river and the headlands and, you know, marshes and things. And, you know, it would be the jewel of the South County.
And it shouldn't be either or. This is a thing that, you know, the South County,
right,
going way back, was always the pauper for, that's P-A-U-P-E-R, for county parks. We had Helen Putnam, and that was it.
Right.
And Putnam, I love it, but it's small and it's well used. There's no reason why we shouldn't have another park up there that's whether it's city or county. And I think, you know, if you're listening now and you want to know, well, I just want to know what to do about it, I think, you know, to contact Supervisor Rabbit, contact your city council members and ask what the plans are and tell them what your interests are. Now, it's not open to the public. It's public property. There is a gate up there, but you are not allowed to go in. What you can do is if you get on Sonoma Mountain Road where it intersects with Old Adobe, you go up 3.0 miles, you'll hit a sharp left turn, you'll see a gate on the right. That's the gate into the city's property. Look at it from there, go back, get on Google Earth, and go to that same spot and start flying over it, because I've done this, and you'll just be blown away by the diversity of topography, deep canyons, riparian woodlands, these grasslands, marshlands, views. You can see a lot of that now just from a virtual tour on Google Earth. So
yeah,
and ask to be able to see the property. Ask for public tours.
Yeah. And it's always been our vision, again, that that this park will develop with volunteer labor and grant monies. I've got a $7,500 grant from the Rose Foundation to be used by classrooms up there doing water-related studies. Well, certainly they can do. There is erosion up there in the Adobe Creek Canyon. Some of that could potentially be remediated. You know, causes could be discovered, et cetera. But certainly, now that the process is moving forward, grant monies is something that we want to start to pursue to help with the development and construction of trails. Trails, you know, there's quite a science to doing it right. You know, no slope to be more than so many degrees. You know, ways for to avoid sensitive habitat, et cetera. So that's all efforts that, you know, remain to be pursued.
Well, what about the Measure M parks that we just passed last year? Is any of that money? Can we use any of that towards?
Potentially, I think so. I'm not positive, but I believe we can. We think that there is a lot of money out there available. Not only there's been, you know, in the county, you've seen in this county that it's been a really in the last, since this initially started, this battle 27, 8 years ago, there's been real progress in this county for pursuing and developing and opening open space for public access. And South County, as Bruce has alluded to, has been kind of left behind. We feel like our supervisor has not done enough for us, since we're the second largest city in the county. Mm-hmm. We're contributing the second largest amount into the fund for that. Yes, we have Tole, but Tole has a certain limited constituency.
Right.
And now it's time for us to, you know, get our supervisor to spend some of that county money here on our behalf and leverage that to get more grant monies to develop this park. Part of the thinking in the mediation was that as a way to control overuse is you limit the parking lot size. So, you know, Doc was like maybe 30 cars, right? Now it's several miles up the hill from Petaluma. So do you open and shut the gates? Do you have a park ranger? Does somebody have to monitor that? Well, There's automatic gates. There's keypads. There's online registration for parking. Those are all things that we see as possible elements of developing this. But, you know, some of those things take money. So that's where we want to get the support of our supervisor and be able to go out and get grants to help defray the cost, because the city never has enough money, never has enough money for the parks that we all want and love. And, you know, it's a struggle to maintain what we have. And, you know, some still argue that, well, we shouldn't spend any money up there when we have parks down here that the lawn's not being mowed enough and there's potholes and stuff like that. But, you know, everybody's got a legitimate viewpoint. But this can be done. This is very doable. Now that we are starting to move ahead, this is entering a new phase where these kinds of forces can come into play, and it's our job to try to line them up.
Great. Now, you mentioned your group, Friends of Lafferty.
Friends of Lafferty Park.
Okay. Is there a website for that?
There is, and we'll have to pre-apologize because it's pretty stale.
Yeah.
Time to freshen it up.
LaffertyRanch.org.
Yeah, because, right, you know, Bruce? People are going to learn about this, and I'm sure there's donations that
yes.
can be
yeah. And, you know, it's there's some great photos on there, and it does have a lot of the history from the initial 10 or 15 years. A great photo of Bill Cordham, you know, speaking at a city council meeting, I think. And there's a lot of information there that people can learn from. We haven't really, none of us has taken on being the website, the webmaster, and kept it fresh. We'll have to.
Are you putting out a call for someone here?
Well, it wouldn't hurt, you know.
Sure. Well, what an opportunity, because yeah. it could be a real first-rate eye-grabber.
Yeah.
And I think Larry Modell, another guy I want to give some credit to, who developed yeah. this website and has done an awful lot of the advocacy work, he's our main contact right now for this. But if you go to that page, it's LaffertyRanch.org, one word, no dashes. You'll be able to see some of this, and there is, you know, click here for contact us.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, there's been a cadre of us who've been kind of in the trenches the longest and the most, and Bruce and I are part of that, and Larry Modell's another, and we've got David Keller and Will Stapp and Neil Fishman, and we've had, you know, Jerry Price and
Sherry Cardo, Jane Hamilton.
Yeah, Dave Lipkitz. You know, there's been... But there's about, you know, six or seven of us who've been slowly, quietly chipping away in the background all
yeah.
these years.
Yeah, thank goodness you did.
Well, you know, and, I mean, we still got a lot of work ahead of us, too, Cindy. It's, you know, there still are people that resist. And, you know, if there's some billionaire up there that wants to cause trouble, I mean, basically he's lawyer told other lawyers that said, now, if there's any impact on his property, he'll be suing, you know. And it's like, well, okay. So hopefully
that can all be mitigated, though. Come on.
Well, let's hope so. And yeah. let's hope that, you know, people, when they understand what the impacts are, really it's pretty limited. It's trail experts and park development experts tell us that in a rural, you know, more wildlands type park like this, 90% of the people are not going to go more than, you know, a few thousand, you know, 1,000 yards from the parking lot,
mm-hmm.
Especially if it's, you know, you got to hike up, right? That's why that ADA trail is so important, because it really gives you a real flavor of how magnificent this part of the mountain is. And theoretically, we'll have a boardwalk through or along the wetlands at the bottom bench, and people get that first overlook and really get a taste of it. And there's plenty of great places to have a picnic, you know, photographs, et cetera, do some easy hiking. And then, you know, for those who are more adventuresome, there's just a whole nother world out there. But statistically, 90% of the people don't even take advantage of that, right? So people who live up there, you know, or who have their fears and concerns, sometimes are not aware of those sorts of realities. And they just think, oh, people are going to be out there destroying my fences, you know, harassing my cows,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah. And we don't have to look too far to the south in Marin County, where it's an asset if you have a park next to your property, because
yeah.
that means it's not going to get developed. It means that you've got people who are going to be out there with their eyes open and their ears open for anybody that's up to no good, like a
right.
pot plantation, for instance.
Yeah. which somebody did make a little gross spot on Lafferty
was
a few years ago. Yeah.
Part of the erosion problem that you spoke earlier?
No, actually, the erosion is in the steeper walled portion of the canyon of the Adobe Creek. Now, there's some speculation
to the creek.
What's that?
Well, the cows would just walk down these steep banks.
Yeah, and trigger erosion.
Gotcha.
And there's been a lot of problem with some of the neighbors letting their cows, like the Chaytas had a whole gate open, you could see the cows had just beaten down. They had a path going into Lafferty, and they were crapping in the stream and polluting and things like that.
Yeah,
and so, whereas the Tabernetes and Findlay are like, well, you know, the city of Petaluma is not a good neighbor. And it's like, well, if you want to be, us to be good neighbors, you guys need to be good neighbors too and keep your damn cows off of our stream, right?
Yeah.
But, so there's, things of that nature that have to be dealt with too.
Well, that's great. I always love hearing you guys talk about this. You're so passionate about it. and I think a lot of us thank you for continuing the fight on it. It's important to me. I hope I hope everybody listening today realizes the importance to the community with this fight, and gives you their support. So.
Yeah, and we'll be organizing at some point here in the near future. More fundraisers, maybe at Lagunitas. Okay. It's been a few years since we've had one there, but that kind of thing to help heighten the awareness. You know, in the 27 or 8 years we've been on this, there's been a huge demographic change in Petaluma. New families have moved in, have never heard of it, or, maybe have heard an echo about it, don't know the history, have no idea what we have setting up there. And, people with young kids and things.
Well, one of my first trips up there, I had my son on my shoulders up at the top, and he's 30 now. I could probably ride on his, but my granddaughter is just about shoulder ready. She's 18 months, and she loves the outdoors, and she loves birds, and she loves water and acorns, and I just can't wait to get her up there on the trail.
I remember Patricia Tuttle Brown carrying her infant daughter, who's now, like your son, in late 20s. And
kids of their own.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to give Bruce a chance to talk about his baby, and we've been talking climate change here in Petaluma recently. It's about time. And Bruce, do you want to tell us what you've been working on?
Sure. Well, I was working for Enphase Energy in Petaluma about almost 3 years ago, and they did downsizing. I got laid off, and I decided to start working full-time as a volunteer for this group called Citizens Climate Lobby. You can look them up online. Basically, what we're trying to do is adopt a respectful and appreciative approach to our elected leaders and community leaders, and to put a price on carbon. And that means that the oil companies, when they import it or pull it out of the ground, or the coal companies, they pay a fee based on how much pollution it's going to cause. It goes into a trust fund off limits to Congress. And at the end of every month, they divide it up into equal shares, and everybody gets electronic funds transfer, or a check, if you like, with the dividend. And it's called carbon fee and dividend. Since I started working on this maybe 7 years ago, in the beginning, the Republicans didn't even want to think about climate change. And because of getting slapped in the face with all these climate problems, and because of the persistent pressure that organizations like ours have been approaching them with, now they're not only acknowledging climate change, but our legislation, this is introduced in Congress, it's called the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, H.R. 763, to bipartisan co-sponsorship. Now we've got Republicans signing on. We've got Republicans that are kind of waiting for the right moment to sign on, but the Democrats, this particular bill has, was it 58 now?
I counted this morning.
58. It was 57 yesterday.
Yeah.
It's, we're now getting to the point where we have the strongest climate bill that's ever been considered.
Co-sponsors,
thank you. Yeah. Ever been considered in the United States. And it's expected that after 12 years, there'll be a 40% reduction, just because as the cost of fossil fuels and the things that are using them, like gasoline, electricity, go up, people will switch to renewables, and they'll have that dividend check to help them, afford pay for solar, pay for efficient houses or cars, or to spend downtown on groceries or restaurants. And I just wanted to point out a real significant aspect of this that most people don't know. This dividend, you remember the, what was it, the TARP or the stimulus back in 2008?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You probably got between $600 and $1,200, one-shot thing. If you're a family of four, two adults, two children, in the first year, you're going to be getting about $700, about $60 a month. After year five, it's going to be more like $300 a month. And this is all money that's been collected from the fossil fuel companies for the privilege of putting their byproduct into your atmosphere.
And your body.
And your body. So it's a real elegant method. But the cool thing about it is that because it doesn't create a big government bureaucracy, which Republicans don't like, they're supporting it. And it has a chance of actually becoming law. Probably not through Mitch McConnell, but we're trying to get the inside track on having a bill with an irresistible force of support from across the country, red states, blue states, purple states, so that when Congress changes next, hopefully soon, and the presidency changes, then this bill, along with a lot of other things that need to happen, and this can be part of a Green New Deal. In fact, of those 58 co-sponsors, I think 20 of them are also co-sponsoring the Green New Deal resolution. Mm-hmm. So it's something that even you know, the red, blue, and purple people can get behind.
So as a citizen, me, the citizen, how is that going to impact me? Is it going to impact my wallet? Is it going to give me any breaks? Tell me exactly what it's going to look like.
You'll get that dividend EFT every month. And the first one comes out before the fee actually kicks in.
And how much are we talking? Just a ballpark.
Well, if you buy yourself, I think I could look it up here because I have the dividend calculator.
But you said a family of four would be $700.
In the first year, because the fee goes up every year. So it starts at $15 a ton. But the next year it's 25, then 35, then 45.
Okay.
So it's increasing the size of that big pile of money.
Right.
Everybody gets an equal share. Mitt Romney gets the same share that you get.
But theoretically, then the companies are starting to reduce their carbon pollution, which they're not then paying so many dollars into the fund.
Ultimately, this thing just exhausts itself when we're down to 10% of the emissions that we had in I forget what the baseline year is. I think it's like 2010. Then the law expires.
Okay.
So
I'm surprised at the number of people that don't really take this seriously, that don't think we have a problem.
A crisis in the environment.
Exactly.
Well, part of it is just the aversion to the solution. I mean, I run into a lot of people that think that if you're going to solve the climate crisis, you need to bring back Stalin and impose top-down government controls and tell everybody what they do day to day with their life. The beauty of this is you get the money back. If you want to spend it all on renting movies or spend it all on better health care, you don't have to spend it on clean energy or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You have that freedom of choice.
You can spend it on your muscle Mustang.
You could do that if you wanted to, but then you're going to need that more and more money as time goes by because that gasoline's going to go up.
Way up.
10 cents, 15 cents a month. You know,
and part of the appeal of this, right, Bruce, is that it's quote-unquote market-based.
Yep.
So conservatives and Republicans can relate to that more readily.
Yeah.
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 So, but just think of it this way. We're going to solve the climate crisis, and you're going to get money for it.
Well, is it going to absolutely 100% solve the crisis or just put us where we need to be?
It's got to be, it's like if you're building a house, this would be a big part of the foundation.
Yeah.
But you can't live in a foundation. Right. You have to have the walls and the ceiling. So, you know, carbon sequestration, where we try to put the carbon back into the soil or into forests, having programs that support the transition for people who are in the fossil fuel industry or that live downstream from the refinery, maybe even work in the refinery. We've got to take government money and government programs to support these people. A big part of what we're trying to do is make sure that it's a just transition and not just something that's going to get the job done and put it on the back of the poor people in America or the poor nations of the world. And that's what this does. It's very equitable.
Well,
how about that?
You've been busy. You've done your homework.
CitizensClimateLobby.org. Check it out. We have an active chapter here in Sonoma County and even in Petaluma.
Okay. And thank you for that. I will make sure Jason, who's our web guy, goes to our site, which is InsidePetaluma.com, and adds both of your links. That's friendsoflafertypark.org.
It's just Lafferty, Lafertypark.org.
Lafertypark.org.
Yeah.
Okay. And Bruce, you want to say yours again? For
it's CitizensClimateLobby.org.
Okay. And ours is InsidePetaluma.com. So.
Inside Petaluma. We love Petaluma.
We love Petaluma. Thank you guys both very much for being here.
Yeah.
And we'll have you back when
Thanks for having us, Cindy. It's nice.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is just one more way to try to get the word out to folks that, you know, don't know what we have right here in our back pocket, right here in our backyard, you know. Pretty amazing.
It is gorgeous up there.
It's a spiritual experience. If you like the outdoors, this is up on the top end of beauty and
inspiration.
Inspiration and surprises and,
great fun.
We want to keep it that way.
And what is the name of the road that goes up there, Matt?
Sonoma Mountain Road.
That's right.
Yeah.
Also known as Gravity Hill.
Yeah, it's just past Gravity Hill.
Yeah. Anyway.
Great.
You can still drive up there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of an idea of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's just going to give you just a little taste, but...
That's right.
Probably neighbors don't want to
some people
driving
do.
Up there, but I...
Some drive
people
slowly and carefully, please.
And some people do still hike up there, but I don't know about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Slowly and carefully.
Yeah. All right. Thanks again, you guys. You've been listening to Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas. I co-host weekly here with Jason Davies and Janice Cater Thompson. We're here every Friday from 11 to noon, and we want you to come back next week and give us a listen. Go like us on our Facebook page, which is KPCA Inside Petaluma. And we will see you next week.
Thank you,
Thanks again, guys.
Thanks, Cindy.
See you later. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.